set a good example that we really miss. What? Woohoo!
Oh, there goes my microphone. What a smooth beginning.
Good morning, everybody. So, thank you so much for joining us today at this Ventura Center for Spiritual Living virtual service. We're just so delighted that you're here with us and reaching around the world, spreading the compassion community and just loving us up. So thank you so much. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Brother Brock, who is our Vice President of the Board.
Hi. V is not for Ventura. The name of this room is actually Vortex. Bonnie decided to name it Vortex a year or so ago, and I think V also stands for virtual. So we are a virtual vortex. We're a community of practice, and what we practice is compassion. And welcome to being a part of that. You are priceless. You are needed. We are helping. We are sending ripples forth across the planet. And I am so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful that you are here. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Brock. It's great. So I'm going to do some announcements, and we have some helper announcers today. But let me go ahead and get us started. The first Wednesday meditation is Ho'oponopono, which is a Hawaiian prayer of forgiveness with Lita Martin, who actually lived in Hawaii, and she's kind of an expert. This is an amazing prayer, an amazing way to let go of anything that you're holding on to. And you might be surprised at the results of doing Ho'oponopono. It's really incredible. So that's on Wednesday evening, and all of the information about how to get on that virtual meditation is on our website, www.venturacsl.org. We're doing a Red Cross blood drive. We're sponsoring them at our center, and that's on Tuesday, October 13th. You have to pre-register online, and under our website, under events, it'll show you how to do that. I know I'm giving blood. Looking forward to it. Really enjoyed it the last time, so hope we see a lot of you out there. And tell your friends. We're also on Instagram, so our following is growing slowly. So if you're not on Instagram and you'd like to get on there and support us and help grow our center, please do check onto Instagram. Start liking our stuff and commenting on it. After the service, there are one-minute miracles via Zoom, and Doreen will post a link in the Facebook comments at the end of the service so you can jump on there and get a beautiful prayer from one of our amazing practitioners. I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer now, who's going to talk about our book study in October.
Hello. This is so weird. On Sundays this month, I'm going to be hosting a Zoom class, a book study. It's 2 hours at 1, and we're going to go deeper into the book of the month, Living Your Powered Life. I forget the name of it. Okay, by Stephen Cope. It's a beautiful book, and I have some fun activities planned, and I just hope to see anybody who wants to drop in. You don't have to come to all four. You can come to just whatever you can make it to, and we're going to talk a little bit about the service, a little bit about the book, and a little bit about where we all are. I'm looking forward to being able to connect with everybody because I miss everybody here. So look forward to seeing you.
Thank you, Jennifer. The name of the book is actually The Great Work of Your Life, which I have trouble remembering too. I don't know why, but it's The Great Work of Your Life, and it's really about purpose and dharma, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing, and it's based on the Hindu teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. So that being said, let's go ahead and get Bernie to talk about her class.
Good morning. Speaking of forgetting names, the name of my course is Defining Moments, Redefined. Most of the time I remember it as defining moments myself because it's a way to look back at your life, look at the ways that have brought in your feelings, your behaviors, your habits and patterns. A few years ago when I decided and was inspired to teach this class or develop this class, it actually came from that practice that I used on myself. I noticed that I had some habits and patterns and behaviors that really weren't serving me. So I thought redefining the way that I got those behaviors through beliefs and thoughts that I didn't think really served me, I decided to change those through changing my perspective. So this class, Defining Moments Redefined, is all about how we look at our life, the kinds of events and even moments that may influence the way we act and behave in our lives and just shift into a pattern of a better feeling space for well-being within ourselves. So we'd love to have you join us October 13th, Tuesday night, 6:30, and I think it's going to be 90 minutes, but it says 2 hours. So if we're verbose, we might be 2 hours. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. That sounds like a really wonderful, empowering class, so I'm really grateful you're doing it. You can stand up there if you want. We got a children's message coming up right now. Oh, no, I forgot the announcement. Sorry, I forgot. They didn't do a couple of things. Okay, so one more announcement, and that is, oh, I'm so glad I didn't forget this one. The flowers today are dedicated to our own Reverend Karen Mondragon, who graduated from the School of Ministry yesterday, and no one deserves it more. Yay, Reverend Karen. Beautiful. Karen actually spoke at the graduation. It was virtual, and I attended it, and she did a beautiful job of speaking. It was just wonderful. So, like Annette said, when she wrote the announcements, no one deserves it more. Okay, let's have Bill come forward, and Bill is going to go ahead and give us our children's message.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Bill Hadris with Youth and Family, and today I wanted to read something to you. Since the beginning of time, people have set out to explore their surroundings. Magnificent discoveries have been made, as big as underwater mountain ranges, and some as small as a single cell organism. As we evolve, we become more knowledgeable about the symbiotic relationship between all aspects of our planet. Each of us is a microcosm of this wonderful universe that we live in. We get to spend our lives discovering the diversity of the hidden treasures that make up who we are. What is true is that these treasures are the gifts that are uniquely ours to give as our individual contributions to the perfect balance of the macrocosm that is life. So I'd like to invite you to close your eyes, take a breath, and discover some things about yourself. I'd like you to think, are you more like a screen door or a wooden door? Are you more like a paper book or a tablet? Are you more like a chair or a couch? Are you more like glass or like plastic? Are you more like the sun or the shade? Are you more like the sneak preview or are you more like the movie? And are you more like a passenger or are you more like the pilot? And last, are you more like a cave or are you more like a treehouse? It helps to explore and know the different aspects of ourselves. Sometimes in our lives, we may be brave, and other times, we may be scared. It's okay to embrace all those aspects. Our fear may really be an inner guide to help protect us from something that isn't safe. And on the other hand, our bravery can help us get through tough or scary situations. So I invite you to repeat after me. As I look within,
as I look within,
I discover myself.
I discover myself.
And so it is.
And so it is. Thank you, Bill. That's great. Okay. So just a question. How many of you are a couch versus a chair? Okay. I'm undecided, but Put it in the comments if you would. I'm a couch, I'm a chair. Okay. I think I'm kind of a couch, actually, but that's neither here nor there. I'm a couch. Thanks for that. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Who knows? All righty. Ms. Burney, practitioner, she's going to lead us in prayer.
Good morning again. So if the practitioners, ministers would stand and join me. And as we breathe into this moment, recognizing that this is the time of heart-centered expression. This is the time that we join together in a heart space of full connection, not only within this center where the few of us are gathered, but we expand it out to our virtual community, embracing one another with heart, with mind, and with those intentions of loving kindness and those intentions of compassion. And as we breathe in to that space of kindness and love and compassion, we recognize that in that space, in that emotion of those words, is where that God center of me actually lives. And it is that center where the Spirit, the Divine, lives within each of you, knowing that it is through that space of compassion and love and understanding even, we find that depth of connection with ourselves, and we find that depth of connection with each other. Recognizing also that it is that space of, excuse me, it is that space of love that is expressing in and through each of us. It is that space of love that is that divine embrace, holding and appreciating and loving each of us. And from that space, we reach our thoughts and our feelings out into the world, embracing one another, holding that intention of the perfection and the well-being of each other, of our community, and of those in the world that may be needing prayer, that may be needing our uplifting thoughts. Recognizing that this is the moment that the divine has offered us that sense of love. Recognizing that this is the moment that we are one with one another. Recognizing that it is through this unified connection that we build a better world, a better place, a better space for each other to live and breathe and have our sense of being in. And so with a grateful heart, I offer these words to the mystery of that law that simply says yes. And I release these words into that law. And together we say, and so it is.
And so it is. Thank you, Bernie. And so let us continue with eyes closed, our downward gaze. Continue to breathe in deeply. Continue to know that place of oneness within each of us. And relax. Into greater fullness as we listen to the words of our sacred reading.
Excerpts from The Great Work of Your Life by Stephen Cope. Listen to this quote from the Gospel of Thomas. If you bring forth what is within you, it will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, it will destroy you. I have to admit that second phrase of the sentence hit me the hardest. It will destroy me? In retrospect, I realized that I felt the punch of that second phrase only because I had genuinely experienced moments of the first. Here's an experiment. Stop for a minute and ask yourself these questions. Am I living fully right now? Am I bringing forth everything I can bring forth? Am I diving down into that ineffable inner treasure house that I know is in there, that trove of genius? Am I living my life's calling? Am I willing to go to any lengths to offer my genius to the world? For me, truthfully, when I pose these questions to myself, I hear myself say, as I shuffle from one foot to the other, well, yes, I am just in the process of instituting a new plan that will bring me fully alive again. Uh-huh. That's a no, isn't it? But why is it a no for me just now? And what can I do about it? Do I have any control of these things? Yogis insist that every single human being has a unique vocation. They call this dharma. Dharma is a potent Sanskrit word that is packed tight with meaning, like one of those little sponge animals that expands to 6 times its original size when you add water. Dharma means, variously, the path, the teaching, or the law. For our purpose, it will mean primarily our vocation or our sacred duty. It means most of all, and in all cases, the truth. Yogis believe that our greatest responsibility in life is to this inner possibility, this dharma. And they believe that every human being's duty is to utterly, fully, and completely embody his or her own idiosyncratic dharma. People actually feel happiest and most fulfilled when meeting the challenge of their dharma in the world. Fulfillment happens not in retreat from the world, but in advancement towards and in profound engagement with it. And so it is.
So we breathe deeply into the wisdom. And in the spirit of love, let us breathe in deeply once again. And then exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is.
Good morning, everyone. It's always wonderful to be here. I love our theme for this morning, Dharma. The song that we've prepared for you this morning is something I reached into the closet and pulled out of the mothballs, and I haven't sung this song in about 8 years. And it is a song that was originally written by the amazing songwriter, singer, producer, musician, Richard Marx. I fell in love with it and decided that, based upon the inspiration of what I so often felt, very meditatively, this song, as he wrote it, actually felt like a beautiful meditation or prayer that he wrote for his daughter, for his child, in a very protective perspective. And considering where we are in our lives today, all around the globe, and the downtime, what I have nicknamed the divine reset. There's been such stillness, but hopefully we have remained vitally and vibrantly awake in that stillness as we now awaken yet to a newness, and as we emerge into a new way of being. But that happens every moment, right? Every moment of every day. And this particular song, this particular meditation, does explore the question of, who am I? Where am I supposed to be? What is my purpose? Spirit's Lullaby.
I was never alive till the day I could rest in you. When I look into my life, I see what I was put here to do. I turn off the world and listen deep inside, and I can hear your spirit's lullaby. You are forever near, the one I can always call. Right now I have no more fear, knowing you'll catch me if I fall. And you're here, close enough to breathe into my life, and I can hear your spirit's lullaby. Show me how to love without just taking. Reveal the meanings I should know. And like a child by the light, I am awakened within your arms that won't let go.
Thank you. So here's a fun fact about Dion. and his relationship with this church. Dion is our singer, in case you didn't catch his name. So I believe when the Sunday, at the beginning, when Dion sang, he sang, and then all churches had to shut down. Then he sang again, and all churches could open. Then he sang again, and all churches had to shut down. He sang today, and there's a rumor that churches are going to open on October 6th. Oh, yeah. You got the power. Yeah. All righty. So the question is that do we have the power? do we have what it takes to navigate this crazy world? And it seems even crazier than ever. And I would say absolutely that we do. And part of that power is embodied in this idea of purpose or dharma. I'm going to reread that quote that started Hugh's reading, the one from the Gospel of Thomas, and I'm going to read it so I don't mess it up. It's in the book that we're reading this month, The Great Work of Your Life. And Gospel of Thomas says, "If you bring forth what is within you, it will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, it will destroy you." Sounds a little harsh. The part about being destroyed. It also gives me pause when I think about what happened to Thomas, allegedly, that he went to India and got killed as a martyr. So maybe he didn't bring forth what was within him. Who knows? Sorry. No, but it's not about that. It's not about the material effects of the world or living or dying. It's that in the moment that we are living, at any moment, we can switch into our purpose. We can switch into our dharma. We can switch out of that place that is resisting our dharma and move into a place where we are truly, truly living on purpose. As Hugh said in the reading, dharma is another word for sacred calling or vocation, and I may refer to it as purpose now. I'm wondering if there's anyone here that has, from time to time, felt that they were not living their dharma or their purpose. Maybe you don't even feel like you have one. I had a purpose fail the other day. If you've been attending this church or watching us online for a while or been around me a lot, you know that part of my purpose is, it's a lot about compassion and kindness. Right now I'm working a lot on reconciliation because all of the division that's going on in various issues in our country. But let's say that kindness is my purpose, because that's kind of an overriding principle. And as a symbol of that kindness, I have one of these masks. I don't know if you'll be able to see it online, but it says, "Be kind." It's a mask that several of us have now because our video guy, Brian, got them for us. And I was going into Vaughn's to go grocery shopping, and Vaughn's is my ashram where I do a lot of work of kindness, and I just didn't feel like being kind. And I had this mask. So I put it on like this. It's like, do not expect kindness from me today because I don't have it in me. I was having a bad day. And lo and behold, you know, what you're looking for, you find, because there was somebody that was not particularly kind to me. And although I did not retaliate verbally, I carried her with me for the whole shopping excursion about what I wanted to say to her. That also qualifies as a dharma fail, stepping away from the intention to be kind. So one of the ways that this book works, The Great Work of Your Life by Stephen Cope, one of the ways that this book works is that they talk about dharma from the frame of reference of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is an ancient Hindu scripture that has been around forever. I don't know the exact date, but it's been around for a really long time. It's one of the oldest spiritual texts. And in the basic cliff notes of the story of the Bhagavad Gita is that there's this guy, his name is Arjuna, and he is a warrior. It is his destiny, it is his dharma to be a just warrior, to fight just battles. And then there is his charioteer, whose name is Krishna, who is also God in disguise. And it's about the struggle of Arjuna stepping into his true purpose, into his true dharma. Now, when the story opens, Arjuna is facing this battle where he is going to be fighting people that he knows and people that he cares about, but it has to do with justice, so he feels that he is supposed to do it. What does he do in response? He huddles on the floor of his chariot, quivering, saying, I don't know if I really want to do this. I'm filled with doubt. It's a metaphor, perhaps. Maybe some of us, some of you, some of me, have been called to something mighty. And when it doesn't feel particularly easy, we huddle on the floor of our metaphorical chariot with great fear and with great doubt and say, you know, maybe that's not my dharma. Maybe I should be doing something else. Well, in this text, in this sacred Hindu text, Krishna, God, sets him straight. But it really is about the conflicts that we all feel. It's a metaphor for the conflicts that we all feel and how we navigate doubt and fear and insecurity and all of those things that I call anti-purpose, all of those things that stand in the way of us expressing our full purpose. And so that's what we're talking about a bit today. One of the greatest things that stands in the way of our dharma or our expression of purpose, the author talks about it in the book and the Bhagavad Gita talks about it as well, is doubt. I'm wondering if anybody listening has ever had a vision about something that they feel really called to do and then doubted it. When I attended the School of Ministry graduation yesterday, one of the speakers said that she tried 4 times to get into the School of Ministry, and it wasn't that she wasn't admitted, it's that she had doubt. She had a lot of doubt about whether this was the calling of her spirit or the calling of her ego. Doubt shows up in many ways for us. In the book we're featuring, Stephen Cope identifies 3 forms of doubt. One of them is the doubt that shows up as fear of closing a door. He talks about a woman who is a friend of his that was a dean at an exclusive girls' college up in the probably Massachusetts or so area. He said that his friends called it Crunchy Granola University. We've probably all seen perhaps exclusive girls' colleges like that, maybe, right? You know, if you've seen Animal House, there's one in that. and you know, well, maybe I shouldn't go there because some of you may be wearing these outfits, but it's like hairy legs and Birkenstocks and, you know. If you've got hairy legs and Birkenstocks, I apologize. They're coming back in, okay? All right. I myself have hairy legs much of the time. Oversharing. Some people say that they're having trouble with our sound. Today might be a good day to to enact that trouble with our sound. Anyway, she was a dean of this exclusive hairy-legged college, and she was so good at it. She was excellent at it, and she'd been doing it for years, and then 1 year, it just started feeling like it wasn't a good fit anymore. And she knew that it was probably time to leave. It was probably time to do something else. She had this passion for gardening, and she wanted to garden, and she was saying to herself, how am I going to make a career out of gardening? And she had this passion for teaching English literature, and she wanted to maybe step down from the dean and teach English literature in the college. Then she said, oh, I might miss out on some of those cool dean things that I used to get to do. And she remained stuck in this limbo, in this purgatory of not stepping this way or not stepping that way because she was afraid of the dean door closing. And the challenge with that is that when the dean door closes and you really close it shut and lock it and throw away the key, you're not sure what you're getting into over here. You know, I also call that the trapeze syndrome, which is a little more graphic and a little more immediate. You're swinging on the trapeze, you know you have to let go to grab the next trapeze, and there is that period of time when you're in float mode. You are floating with nothing to hold on to. And that happens a lot in the expression of Dharma or in the calling of a new purpose for ourselves. It's like we're afraid to stop what we're doing, even though something better might be waiting for us. And that is the might is the killer there. It might be waiting for us. But I think one of the points of the Bhagavad Gita is that you do it anyway. You do it anyway because it's not about the results. It's about the process of letting go, which is really important. You know, a lot of us experience that with the church. You know, after Dion closed it down several times with his with his singing and all, you know, we, you know, I love your voice, by the way. Yeah. We had to just like let go of everything that we knew and just jump into everything that we didn't know. And it was hard. It was hard. And that was kind of a mandatory thing. We just had to do it. But sometimes when we're selecting a new path, it's not really mandatory. We're doing okay over here, and there's really no good reason to jump over here other than that, oh, I don't know, God is calling you to do so. You know, but it still feels treacherous either way. And it feels more treacherous when it's by choice versus necessity. So, for everybody watching, for everybody listening, if you are afraid of an old door closing before you step into something new, think about that. Think about whether that is a denial of your true calling in life, and meditate on it and get some help. Get a prayer from one of our practitioners and see if spirit truly is calling you to something that is a deeper fulfillment of your soul. Another type of doubt in Dharma is expressed through what the author calls Dharma denial. I also call it Dharma envy, but it's Dharma denial and Dharma envy. So in this incident, he talks about a nurse who is just so skilled and so wonderful, and she's a psychiatric nurse, and she's so wonderful with the patients, and is kind and loving and beautiful. And when she's not at work, she goes out of her way to help other people, and she's just so sweet and so kind and really like a radiant source of comfort to others. The problem is that her brother does something much more exciting. I think he's like a film producer or composer or something like that. Something that the world recognizes as like really sexy and really exciting. And she's like, yeah, I'm just a nurse. I'm just nice to people. And really, that's Dharma envy, you know? Somebody else's Dharma is not better than yours. If you are doing your soul's calling, there is no better or worse than infinity. If you are here to be kind to people, that is enough. That is enough. And I think that's where it stems from, is this feeling that, well, it's coming from me, so therefore it must not be enough. But if you are truly called to it, start to affirm that it is enough. Start to affirm that kindness is enough. Start to affirm that generosity is enough. Start to affirm that small acts of goodness are enough. Start to affirm that taking care of your children is an incredible dharma. Start to affirm that reading great spiritual texts and being able to communicate them, that is a dharma. Start to affirm that working in the garden, working with billions of living things in the soil to create beauty and to create food, that is a dharma. Your dharma is enough. There is no need for dharma envy. And then the last form of dharma doubt that the author talks about is missing the mark. Missing the mark is often thought of as sin, but he calls it an aim problem. Your aim is not good. You're shooting for that particular dharma over there, and something distracts you, and you sort of, your arrow goes someplace else. It's close, but it's not quite a good fit. And I think that the source of that arrow that is close but not quite a good fit is the word should. I really should be doing this versus this thing that I'm called to do. In the book, he tells a story about a priest who just loved the Catholic Church. He woke up every day excited about the Catholic Church, and he wanted to be active in the church, and his mother really, really wanted him to be a priest, so he decided to be a priest. And then many years into the priesthood, he realized that he didn't necessarily like the priesthood, even though he was quite qualified and quite competent at much of it. What he really loved about the Catholic Church was the music. He wanted to be a musician. And so that's an example of aiming, aiming, and the aim being slightly amiss. Yes, it had something to do with the church, but it was church music. I guess the message for us for that is to be wary of shoulds, of what you're telling yourself or what others are telling you that you should do, because it's a little bit more impressive, it's a little bit more what I want for you, it's a little bit a little sexier, a little more I think impressive is really the word that keeps coming up for me. And do what you're really called to do. Do what you're really called to do. Some of you may be wondering if you even have a dharma, right? If you even have a sacred calling, if you even have a vocation. Let me just reassure you that if you are here and if you are defining dharma like I am, a sacred calling that encompasses everything, then yes, you have a dharma. Whether it is quote-unquote just being kind, whether it is quote-unquote just being a great parent, whether it is quote-unquote showing up on church and making my day, whether it is quote-unquote being kind to your parents. I could go on and on and on because there is an infinite number of dharma expressions here in the world, sacred purpose in the world. And if we all know that we're on point, if we all know that we're on target, if we all know that we're on dharma, then the world becomes a much deeper and a sweeter place. Ah, this is the other thing I wanted to say. Another thing that keeps us from dharma is sometimes fear. Doubt and fear are very closely related, but this is fear that is very specific. Fear that really gets us stuck in the idea of when-then thinking. The inability to take a risk because conditions are not exactly right for the expression of our dharma. You know, people might be saying, well, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic right now, so once the pandemic clears and goes away, whenever that is, once the pandemic clears up, then I'll start living my purpose. No, 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 1,000 times no. The time for your dharma is right here and right now. We're waiting to live on purpose until the world settles down, but what if the unsettled world is your purpose? What do you think about that? The unsettled world is your purpose. We are waiting for conditions to be right in order for us to be able to act. But what if the wrong conditions are truly the impetus for us to act? They are the inspiration for us to act. The world and all of us are always dying and resurrecting. And it takes courage to go through that process. And yet when we look at nature, you know, we see death and resurrection around nature all of the time. And we see that there are a lot of creatures with perhaps lesser measurable intelligence than we have. I listened to a minister speak the other day on a video I was watching. He was talking about how COVID is asking us all to dance in a new way. COVID is asking us to step up in a new way and to show up in a new way and to move through with not the absence of fear, but the presence of courage, which is moving through, not despite fear, but because of fear, with fear, embracing fear. And he talked about how when, you know, you see a caterpillar go into a chrysalis and it starts to dissolve, the caterpillar doesn't go, whoa, I'm out of here. Right? It's the same thing for us. Things are starting to dissolve. Things have been dissolving. We don't get to say, whoa, I'm out of there. We get to stand there and just trust the grace of God is perpetuating all of this in a beautiful, wonderful way that will somehow take off into a butterfly if we allow the process to be. He talked about how when a chicken comes out of an egg, and he has never in his whole life, and I think he lived on a farm too, I think he has never in a whole life seen a chicken stick its head out of the egg and then say, ugh, start putting the pieces of the egg back all over itself, right? Same thing is happening for us. We are hatching, people. We are hatching into something new. So you can strut your tail feathers and be that presence that you long to be, but we don't have to keep putting the egg over ourselves. You know, that's the equivalent maybe of putting the pillow over our head and clicking the remote as we watch endless reruns of Criminal Minds in my house, the FBI profilers, woohoo! And I've never given birth, but, you know, some of you who have can perhaps vouch for this, that I assume that once you shoot the baby out, right, because that's how it happens, bing! It doesn't crawl back up in there, does it? Has that happened to anybody? Raise your hands. Put your names in the comments if that has happened to you. I want to meet you. And you can imagine the baby's not too happy about being out there. You know, they're all comfy in here, getting everything he or she needs. And then, bam, bright light, a lot of attention, crying, cold. I'm sorry. So maybe that helps us navigate our dharma as we think of it as that we are giving birth to something or that something is giving birth to us, and we're here now and we get to learn and we get to make the best of it and we get to navigate it. We are Arjuna on that battlefield of learning how to navigate through these times, because there will always be challenges, there will always be conditions, because that's the way the world is made. The world is made of contrast, and contrast is a good thing. In my class that I'm teaching recently, we talked about contrast in terms of grace and accountability. We talked about how necessary contrast is, and I came up with what I thought was the best example of contrast ever. Chris will agree with me. Chris Kimbler, our pianist, talked about how in order to play the piano successfully, you need the black notes and the white notes. Now, I wanted to come in here early and spray paint the keyboard white to see if it could be done. Or black, you know, and if anybody could do it, Chris could play it, but I didn't do it. But we need contrast, and part of what provides contrast for us is law and structure, something that we can push against. So I have written down the 4 points that the Bhagavad Gita makes about dharma and purpose. And the 4 points are: look to your dharma. That means seek your dharma, look to it, find it, seek it, and then be it. Do not tremble before it. The second point is to do your dharma full out. That means not putting the eggshells back over you. That means not crawling back up into the womb. That means not getting out of the chrysalis when it starts getting messy. Do your dharma full out. Commit it. Commit to it utterly. Commit yourself utterly. Do let go of the outcome. Success and failure in the eyes of the world are not your concern, right? That takes away dharma envy. Success and failure as it relates to the world is not your concern. It is better to fail at your own dharma than to succeed at the dharma of someone else. That's one thing that I learned when we were learning to how to put church together. You know, sometimes you just have to move. It's like ready, fire, aim. You just have to move. And I kept getting this message from this person that I was listening to, and it repeated in my head over and over again: a poorly executed plan B plus is better than a great plan A that has never been executed. So move on your dharma. Do it full out, let go of the outcome, and then turn your actions over to God. Remember way back when, in January, when life was sort of normal, relatively speaking, we were working on those change me prayers? So what if we could do change me prayers about dharma? Divine beloved, help me to live this dharma. Divine beloved, help me to live this purpose. Divine beloved, help me to put my be kind mask facing out when I go to Vaughn's next time so I can live my purpose of being kind. Divine beloved, I can't do it on my own. You're going to need to help me. Isn't that a beautiful way to go through life? Because the more that we call on the divine beloved, the more that we realize that the divine beloved is easy and available. Dang, I'm going a little long today, but there's a couple more things I want to tell you because for the people at home, we have some graphics coming up that are stunning. So, the other thing, I talked about grace. I mean, I talked about accountability, and now I want to talk a little bit about grace. Grace and accountability merge in terms of helping us find our purpose. One way to cultivate grace is to look at all of the tiny ways that people are expressing their purpose in many, many, many ways that seem like they might be insignificant, but that truly are significant. One of those ways was from a father. His son came down with what they thought was COVID, but it turned out to be leukemia. And the boy had to go to the hospital once a week and get these very aggressive chemotherapy treatments. There was only one parent allowed in the room, so the mother went with the son up to get the treatment. The father stayed in the parking lot. And what the father did was that he put on really loud dance music and dressed in orange pants and did this funky dance in the parking lot for the duration of his son's chemo treatment. And it lifted the spirit of his son. Now, you may be saying, well, that's crazy. What good does that do? But it turned out that other people in the hospital found out about it, and they started looking for it. They'd be like, is Joe getting his chemo today? Because we want to see that guy dance again. The staff and the patients. That's living your purpose. Doesn't matter if you look like a fool. That is living your purpose full out. Another one, showing us that Dharma is not limited to only the humans here on the planet Earth, but it's all beings blessing each other. There was a dentist that had a lot of frightened patients, and so he rescued a toothless chihuahua. A toothless chihuahua that turned out to be the most amazing therapy dog for calming down frightened dental patients. And he couldn't bite because he didn't have any teeth, so there's that. But it was just this perfect meeting of spirit, just doing something different, being led to something different that helps make the world a better place. And then the last story, showing us that Dharma is not limited by age. Whether you're 90 or whether you're 3 or 4, perhaps younger, you can express Dharma. There's a story about a young boy who was concerned about the fires up in Oregon. And so when he was out in the grocery store with his mother, he saw a baby Yoda. There's grown-up Yoda in the choir loft, by the way. He saw a baby Yoda, and he asked his mother, he was 5 years old, he asked his mother if he could get that Yoda and send it to the firefighters. Again, you might think, oh, that's so trivial. You know, what difference does that make? But the firefighters loved it. And there's pictures online of the firefighters carrying baby Yoda in a backpack, in like a snuggly backpack, and carrying him into the fire zone. Baby Yoda is a hero. So if we look for it, you know, what we focus on expands. If we look for that, if we look for all of these things, then these things will multiply in our lives, and we'll see that there is the opportunity for purpose and dharma and goodness everywhere. And then we'll, excuse me, start to see our own part and our own participation in that dharma. So I ask you, what are you going to do with this information? I hope that you meditate on your dharma. I hope that you take Jen's class because she's going to give you Jen's book study, rather, because she's going to give you more insight on Dharma and purpose. And I hope that you live it fully, because the world needs people like you, people like us, right now. Let us pray.